Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, the 23rd of April, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I got the show underway with an update on a proposed state gun regulation that would initially target a certain make and model of a very popular handgun. Former State Senate Republican leader John McKinney stopped by for his weekly update on a couple of major bills in Hartford. One would target homeschooling, and the other would target future statewide absentee ballot use. All right, let's imagine a scenario here. Let's imagine that, and I'm not a gearhead. I'm not a guy that tinkers with cops, with cars, rather, or with cops. I'm not a guy that tinkers with cars. I've always kind of been a guy that watches the trends in the auto business. Hey, that's a nice looking car over there. Oh, look at that, man. Somebody said that V8 is really cool. But I'm not a tinkerer with cars, right? But what I do know this is that there are a lot of cars sold legally in this country that can probably be tinkered with, be modified, be changed out with aftermarket parts, or have parts used on them, machined by people who are doing stuff that they just shouldn't do. In other words, you can take a stock, really, really fast sports car, right? And you can make it even faster. You can make it handle differently. You can illegally tinker with the emissions, right? So the basic car is still legal, but what lawbreakers are doing is that they're breaking the law. So the question begs, and you'll see where I'm going. I'm going to guns here. But the question begs, if we have a significant amount of the population who can buy a car that is easily modified to become illegal, whether it's the exhaust, whether it's the acceleration, whether it's aftermarket headlights that are too bright, whether it's this, that, or the other, why should we penalize people who ostensibly are buying that car and obeying the law with it? In other words, why are we on bended knee to the criminals again and the people who are already doing something that is illegal and then coming back and essentially penalizing people who really aren't breaking the law? You see what I'm saying here? There's a lot of things you could do with a car, from the headlights to the taillights to the suspension to the muffler to the emissions to black tinting out windows, that are illegal, and you know they're illegal. And if a manufacturer said, well, you know what, or a state said, well, you know what, we're not going to allow this pistol or this car or whatever to be sold here in Connecticut, we're penalizing law-abiding people. And the reason I bring that up, and I think it's a valid comparison. I do. You may say, well, Paul, you can't compare a gun to an automobile. Well, literally, you can't. But I'm talking about lawbreakers versus lawkeepers, people who are law-abiding citizens versus criminals. And because we have a problem with criminality, we're already assuming, well, you know, the company knows that these appeal to criminals. All right, maybe they do appeal to criminals, but it's the criminals, it's the criminality in society that is hurting it for law-abiding people. What am I talking about here? The House voted Wednesday for a controversial bill to ban new pistols that can be easily converted to fire like automatic machine guns. Well, that's already illegal. You're not supposed to do that, from what gun owners tell me. The House vote, and by the way, 15 Democrats voted no on this. What does that tell you? You got 15 members of the House majority either saying to themselves, hey, this might cost me at the polling places this November, and I will effort you a list of those 15. So there are 15 Democrats out there who voted no here on this. So kudos to them. But every other Democrat voted yes on this. I will let you know in due course, either today or tomorrow, who the 15 Democrats were that joined with all Republicans against the measure. The bill now goes on to the state Senate, where Democrats control the chamber 25 to 15. Now, this is the part where I was talking about here. The measure proposed by the governor right now. The governor's got some new polling numbers out. Ruh-roh. Oh boy, Scooby. We'll get to those later. Now, maybe he anticipates a little bit of a rougher fight from Josh Elliott. Maybe he knew that drafting this, or from Ryan Fazio, or from Betsy McCoy, or from Aaron Stewart here. The bill is designed to prohibit the future sale of convertible pistols in Connecticut that can be transformed into highly powerful weapons with a simple Lego-sized switch known as a Glock switch. Well, that's already illegal! Democrats caution the bill would apply. Oh, yeah. Believe the Democrats. That'll get you going. Yeah. Democrats caution the bill would apply only to handguns that were manufactured after the bill would take effect on October 1 and would not impact any Glock handguns that are currently owned by Connecticut residents. Okay, they can say that. Well, let me ask you something. Now, are you, and sadly a lot of people are not, are you familiar with 3D printing? Now, years ago, if you had to make a component to do something illegal to a handgun, somebody unscrupulously would have to machine something for you. In other words, you'd have to go to a tool and die guy or a machine guy or somebody with a lathe. And, you know, cops have told me about this. The guys and gals in town knew who could machine this and that for their gun. They would slip them some cash and nobody would say anything once the part was delivered. All tested, lubed up, polished up and everything. Okay, you don't need to know a nefarious type person anymore. You could do or use what are called 3D printers, and they are literally printers that aren't printing something onto paper. They are making things. Like at the Wallingford Library I go to, there's a 3D printer in the back of the library there that actually, when they turn it on, because it fascinates kids, you know what this 3D printer, you know what I saw this 3D printer turn out in about an hour one day using kind of a heated liquid plastic here, which melts, is formed, and then cools down, a little like a Green Army man. And it did it, and it sounds like a regular old printer, you know, with the printer head. And so this is what apparently is happening. We have nefarious people who police tell me and gun safety and Second Amendment people and whatever tell me and politicos say, well, these people are breaking the law, yet we're going to ban the future sale of guns where this is possible. Don't you think these people are going to figure something else out? Pardon me, but this is bass-ackwards. State Rep. Greg Howard, a Stonington Republican who has worked as a police officer for more than 20 years and owns a handful of Glock pistols, said criminals will be able to avoid Connecticut's law as they have in other jurisdictions. Howard said the evildoers have been able to create a new design to get around the law, particularly while using artificial intelligence and 3D printers. So again, this is like saying you're not going to be able to sell or buy a certain car in Connecticut, even though you're a law-abiding person, because you have lawbreakers doing what lawbreakers do. They break the law. So please explain this to me. Now, again, I'm not a gun owner. I've never fired a live round of ammunition. I'm a strong Second Amendment person because I'm a strong common sense person. So I don't quite understand here. We're going to ban the sale of a handgun, which is ostensibly legal, only because criminals do things that criminals do and are already illegal. Is this, what am I missing here? You don't think that the criminal element is then going to say, well, we can't modify that one. We'll now turn our attention. We'll go on the black web, and these criminals are going to then say, how can we criminal a little more and modify this gun? Stop this. It's insanity. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And they throw this out. Well, you know, the Glock switch, it's a Lego piece. I don't give a crap how big or small the thing is. If it's being done on a criminal basis, let's concentrate on the criminals. And I hope to God this law gets challenged in the Supreme Court. I do. Well, you're just a gun nut, Paul. I don't have any guns. I don't have a freaking water pistol. But what I do have is, I think, a little bit of common sense. You tell me. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. All right, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. 12 Democrats, says here in the Hartford Courant, broke ranks with their party and sided with Republicans, voting against a law that would ban certain new pistols that can easily be converted to fire like automatic weapons. What are you banning the guns for? Is anybody in jail doing this? Like I said, would you ban a legally an automobile or a truck or an SUV or something that can be legally bought or sold in Connecticut and can be legally and lawfully driven because some idiots were modifying it and killing people with it on the roads? I guess you could. Why would you do that? Don't you think that the ne'er-do-wells are going to do what they do again? And I know what you're saying. Oh, Paul, it's only one gun. They can get other guns. Yeah, but it's, as my mother used to say, it's the principle of the thing. But maybe I'm wrong here. I don't know. The House voting 86-64, 15 Democrats joining with all Republicans against that measure. The bill now goes on to the state Senate, where Democrats control the chamber 25-11. The Republicans fought the good fight. They're offering amendments. They all got voted down, and you know how that works, and that's fine. To the victors go the spoils. I'm not saying that the Democratic majority shouldn't exercise every parliamentary tool they have. There's nothing wrong with that. Steve Stastrom, a friend of the radio station, Bridgeport State Rep, chairs the General Assembly's Judiciary Committee. He's been on this show. He's been out with Melissa. He's been out with Lisa. He said, quote, "This is only prohibiting the sale of new handguns," said Stafstrom. "We know Glock can make this change." All right, Steve, with all due respect, if Glock can make that change, and they do, what do we do to other brands of handguns where some ne'er-do-well in his basement with his CAD-CAM machine and his or her 3D printer goes, oh, hey, look at this. They put out on the dark web, I figured out a switch for this handgun, too. Do we then blame the company there? Is there such a thing as a tamper-proof gun? And I know what they're going to say. Well, you know, Glock may have known about this. All right, even if Glock did know about that, what about other companies who know that that their products can be easily modified? So what are we worrying about more here in society? The rights of the law-abiding people to conduct their lives in a law-abiding way, or the rights of the criminals, or criminals who don't care what criminals do because they are criminals. All right, let's get a look at some of the big stories here around the state as we do every Thursday at this time, right around 5:15, give or take a couple of minutes, because this whole clock management thing with me. I'm like an NFL coach. Yeah, he's a good coach, but can't manage the clock. John McKinney joins us, former Republican state Senate leader, who you can see every Sunday at 10 a.m. on News 8, the Capitol Report, with our buddy Tom Dudchick and all the other panelists there. John, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. And before we get into the events of today, I just want to say it's just remarkable that it was almost 40 years ago that L'Ambiance Plaza fell down. And you know, my dad was the congressman at the time. He was very sick and in the hospital, and we were all with him when the news came down, and it was just heartbreaking then, and it's a very sad remembrance, but happy that they at least get acknowledged and remembered every year. I just wanted to lead with that.
Yeah, and John, also the fact that out of that tragedy came, you know, some sense of we have to outlaw and change some of these building codes, so at least in the memory of those workers that were killed, there's more safety in the building trade now.
Yes, and the workers of the IBEW do a fantastic job. So anyways, I just wanted to start with that.
Oh, yes. No, you know, you are right, John. How well I remember that day working at a different newsroom and just sitting there and saying, oh, my God. John, to what's going on today, some interesting stuff at the Capitol. But before we get to that, I want to start with this new University of New Hampshire poll, which is kind of interesting, John. Now, it's an online poll, and I may say, well, it's only younger people doing this. But it does find the cutoff age pro-Lamont versus pro Josh Elliott in a possible primary at about 50 years old. Governor's lost a little support, and Josh Elliott's gained a little support. What do you make of the numbers?
You know, I don't think the Elliott improvement is significant for the governor to be worried. It's still 52 to 18 with about 30% of Democrats undecided. So Josh Elliott can win all of them, which he won't, and he still loses. Overall, the governor's approval rating has slipped a little bit, I think, from 56 down to 52. I think the margin of this error of the poll is probably 2 to 4%. So that could explain some of it. But I would just caution my Republican friends and remind them that Dan Malloy approval rating was at about 46%, and he won re-election handily. So
Yeah. Although I did find it interesting, John, that his overall job performance, I guess, is now 48 to 46, though, even though he could put on a late kick. I'm sure, John, if you're in his campaign, you're going, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's only one poll, but there's got to be a little agita, I would think, there. And this might lead to some different strategies over the next couple of weeks.
I definitely think it will. And, you know, if you look at our neighboring states, Rhode Island, the governor's way under the water. Massachusetts, it's about under 50%. New Hampshire, under 50%. I think that's just the state of the country right now. People are uneasy with inflation, with the cost of living. We're at war. And I think it's probably dangerous for a lot of incumbents now. But I do think when the governor comes out and they adopt changes to the budget, I think you're going to see him looking at affordability. He announced that he's going to try to cut about $200 off of people's electric rates. And so, yes, it's going to change his strategy a little bit, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, John, a couple of controversial bills, the homeschooling bill. So apparently, from what I understand, the curriculum part of this is out. Correct me if I'm wrong, which is a good thing, I think. But that DCF involvement still there. Do you think this ends up getting called for a final vote or not?
I do think it'll get a final vote. I think it will pass. I don't think there'll be a lot of Republican support. There may be some Democrat opposition. As I understand the changes, yes, you're correct. The curriculum part is out. The only requirement that I heard them, and I saw the press conference today with the speaker and Jen Leeper, who's the chairwoman of the House Education Committee, is that if someone pulls their child out of public school to homeschool them, not if you pull them out to go to a private school, which is a little strange because it does seem like they're targeting homeschool parents here, then there would be a background check through DCF to see if there's pending action against the parent. If there isn't, nothing else is done. And it's a one-time thing. That's what they said at the press conference. So it is sharply reduced from what they want to do. But I would caution everybody that the legislature works incrementally. They get one bite, they get one bite today, and they'll take another tomorrow and the third one the year after that.
And obviously, John, coming up with an election cycle, Leader Ritter there the Speaker Ritter, rather, and Mr. Rojas and everything. I mean, they're probably hearing from their membership, their caucus, about the phone calls and the emails they're getting and saying, hey, I got a tough race coming up here. We got to soften this bill just a tad.
Well, I think that's part of it. But I also, the curriculum piece just seems so unfair.
Yep.
And it just wonders why are there so many people in our legislature who just want to go out and sort of demonize, maybe too strong of a word, but homeschooling community. It just doesn't make any sense. There's no evidence that the homeschooling parents are not properly educating their children.
John, finally,
there's more evidence that some of our public
schools. Well, yeah. finally, the whole, well, they call it no excuse absentee ballots in effect. And I was warning people about this leading up to the a vote they were asked on 2024 about this. Basically, John, in a roundabout way, doesn't say it exactly, but it's mail-in voting, which some states have. But at least they have the goodwill to call it that. And apparently now, from what I understand, this has hit a speed bump. Have you heard anything today that may be new on this?
Well, yeah, we have some new information.
Yeah.
The bill in the House was brought out. There was an amendment, and it passed the House, I think, a little after 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
There were no Republican votes, but they made a couple of significant changes. The original bill allowed someone to sign up as a permanent absentee ballot voter.
Okay.
And that would have meant that the towns would have sent them every year the actual ballot to vote. And Republicans raised a lot of concerns about that, because how would the town registrar know if the person was still living at that location?
Yeah.
So what they've done now is you can sign up for a permanent absentee ballot application,
yeah,
which would get sent to you. But now you actually have to fill out the application and get it back. That provides a lot more protections. The real danger here is with the ballot harvesting. Some
yes.
of the stuff we've seen in Bridgeport, that's the real danger of the absentee ballot. The other thing that they did not change, but I'm told, because I talked to a couple of people up there,
mm-hmm.
that they've at least gotten some commitments to try to work on it next year, is to reduce the number of days of early voting from 14 to either 10 or 7.
All right.
In part because if more people are voting by absentee, you don't need the early voting. And in part because a lot of towns are really under pressure financially to do all this early voting. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, John, like I say, half kiddingly, half seriously, you know, this isn't like we're back in the agrarian days where you needed 2 or 3 days to get into town to go vote and then 2 or 3 days to come back, you know, to your farm there. So, yeah, and look, John, as I always say, when was the last time you heard anybody getting in front of a bunch of microphones and say, my God, I couldn't vote in the state of Connecticut? It never happens. It never happens.
No, it never happens. And, you know, I'm okay with early voting, but I think 14 days is far too much, because something could happen with the candidates. And unfortunately, you know, Paul, because of absentee ballots, you know, they took the restrictions on who could vote by absentee out of the state constitution. But, you know, the truth is we all know people who voted by absentee who didn't meet any of those restrictions. So I'm not as worried about the absentee ballots as I am about how they're collected and who can collect them. And obviously, I just think 14 days is a lot. It costs small towns a lot of money to keep, you know, their registrar's office open for all that time. So hopefully they'll work on that in the future.
Former State Senate Republican Leader John McKinney. Catch him this Sunday at 10 on the Capitol Report on News 8. John, thanks as always. Be good. We'll chat with you next week.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. There you go.